Boker Tov world, we have a very big challenge today because this is one of the most difficult and crucial dafim in the Mesechet. And as we pointed out, it's an amazing thing that the Torah has chosen to speak about the general limudim of the Torah as a whole in the context of a sugya that appears to be a departure from the way that we would normally talk about the Dvar Hashem, Sekoamar Hashem, and this is the Zeh HaDavar, and yet we're using it to teach a general rule, it would appear. We're going to see that fantastically, that's not the case, and that in reality, what the Daf is coming to teach is the uniqueness of the sugya, in which we need to make choices about how to apply varied limudim in varied circumstances. So, I want to review with you, first of all, the simple meaning of the dafim that we've had so far, what it is that we're about to undertake. And then to examine the issues that are hidden under the surface and that force us to conclusions which seem very strange on the surface of the Gemara. And yet we have, Baruch Hashem, Rishonim that have opened our eyes to what is really going on. Although there's no consensus at all. Because it's such a wide open sugya, I'm going to be taking the approach of the Ri in Taisvis, which is not the only approach of the Baalei Taisvis, but I believe it to be the most consistent in terms of not needing any material from outside of the actual sugya that the Gemara has. And that's always, always, I believe, the best choice. If we need to arbitrarily have some type of yediyah from the outside that's going to change things, that seems very arbitrary. So, let's begin. The Mishnah told us, in discussing the type of things that were usur to a nazir, the Mishnah told us that there are shlosha minim. Now, those shlosha minim, we need to understand in terms of the pasuk. And the pasuk that we have, the whole sugya that we have in the pasuk is an extremely strange pasuk. And the pasuk creates extremely strange sequence of how it is that it's presenting the dinim of the nazir. So let's just review again what is strange about the pasuk. The pasuk begins with a list of specific items that are usur to a nazir. Yayin, reshechar, yazir. Chomitz yayin v'chomitz shechar lo yishteh. Mishrat anavim lo yishteh. Anavim lachim v'yeveshim lo yochal. So we have four different mentions of specific items or groups of specific items. And then it's followed by a general statement, namely, okay, now that's a very general statement, and it strikes you that there must be a reason for why we would mention all of the things that we mentioned, and then say a general rule, which seems to include all of those things anyway. So what would be the point? We could have just said the klal, couldn't we? And then it goes on to even make us more confused by defining another issue, namely, mechartzanim va'adzag lo yocha. So what we have over here essentially is prat, 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 klal, prat. So for all intents and purposes, we can simplify that equation to just being a sequence of prat, klal, prat. Fine. Now, taking that strange pasuk into consideration, we need to recognize that the last piece of Bichartzanim va'adzag, serves as the basis of Reb Elozer ben Azariah in the Mishnah. And Reb Elozer ben Azariah said, you're not going to be chayev on eating just chartzanim or zagim. You're only chayev if you eat a pair of matched chartzanim with the zag of those chartzanim. So that if you have a grape pieces that includes the skin but no pulp of the grape, together with the pips of that grape with the skin, then you will be chayev. But not if you just eat the pips or the skin. That's Reb Elozer ben Azariah's chiddush. Now, there are other things, mind you, that are to be learned from chartzanim v'adzag, obviously, because chartzanim adzag, and as the Gemara points out, the adzag is an odd, weird way to say things, and therefore it must be talking about something between the chartzanim and the zag, and that would be a collection of grape pulp. So that if you would eat chartzanim, zagim, or grape pulp, unless you hold like Reb Elozer ben Azariah, but if you just hold like the Tanakhama, if you eat any one of those strange things that are not normally the kind of things that you buy and eat, afal pikein, it's considered to be a foodstuff, and you would be chayev for eating it, even though it's not normally what you would eat. Now, in the discussion of the Gemara, we were medayik in the Mishnah from two possible places. Either the words hayotze min hagefen, which would mean not the actual gefen, but only the yotze min hagefen, or from the end of the Mishnah that said, eno chayav ela ach yochal mina anavim kizayit. What would be the point of mentioning mina anavim kizayit if in reality you're chayav even on other things? So if we were medayik, that what the Mishnah is coming to stress is that you are not chayev on products of the vine itself that are not fruit of the vine. So that would mean that in the event that you wanted to use grape leaves that are edible and are used for food, or you wanted to eat grape shoots, the soft shoots, which are edible and can be put into salads, that would not be usher on the nazir, because it specifies in this way only the actual grape vine. That raised a problem. And the problem is that we know that there is a shita of Rabbi Elazar, not to be confused with Reb Elozer ben Azariah, of course, and Rabbi Elazar holds that actually you are chayev on the shoots and the leaves. So let's go through, first of all, we have actually different levels of what is considered to be, possibly be included in the concept of eating from the vine. Okay, the lowest level of all, which no one holds is included, is what the Gemara calls the shabishta. The shabishta is simply the cellulose of the wood itself. Nobody holds that that would be included in the Isurei Nazir, even though he's eating the vine, the grapevine. Yeah, thank you very much. That's not even considered to be eating on any level. Okay, that's the lowest level. Then we get a little bit beyond that. How about the edible shoots and the edible leaves of the vine? Now, I must tell you that we're going to discover that there's a level, impossible level in between, according to Tosfos, which is that there are different levels of leaves. There are tougher leaves and softer leaves. But let's leave that for now, along with the other leaves. And putting aside all of those issues, we'll only concentrate on four things. So we have the shabishta. We have the alim velulavim, which we like to call shoots and leaves, okay, just because it's so cute. And then we have the idea of these pips and these chartzanim, which are not the normal things, not the normal way in which you would eat things. And then I should have said five, actually, because we need to separate out that then we have, beyond that, we have vinegar, let's say, and types of grapes that have become wormy. So they are called the psolet pri. And then we have the real thing. Wine and the actual grapes. So all of those things are the subject of the way in which we're going to learn the pasuk to either include or exclude items out of these five possibilities. So
where does Rebbe place pulp?
What?
Where does Rebbe place pulp? Where is pulp?
With the chartzanim and zag. Chartzanim, okay. It's the odd of the chartzanim v'zag, the odd man out. So we've got the pips, skins, and pulp ahead of the question of leaves and shoots, which themselves are ahead of cellulose, but below the spoiled fruit, which is itself, or the immature fruit, and which is itself below the complete fruit, meaning the wine and or the grapes, including raisins, right? Five different madrigals. And we've got all of these mentions in the pasuk. And so the first issue that we had was, what is the difference between Rabbi Elazar, who includes the leaves and shoots, and the Chachamim, who exclude the leaves and shoots? That was our simple question. It seems to be an innocent question, and it turns out to be a murderous question, which basically starts an entire civil war. But on the simple level, we give a simple answer. Well, actually, there are two general ways of darshaning the Torah. One of them is called klal pradu klal, and one of them is called miut ribui miut. The difference between these two approaches yields different results in the sequence that the parsha has presented us with. It looks like Alon is not concentrating today. That's not a good sign. Whenever business gets involved with pleasure, we have problems. You thought Chinese surveillance balloons are dangerous, let me tell you. Little did you know when you bought all that Korean stuff what you were getting into, huh? So, according to this, if we have the approach of ribui and miut, so then we end up not being able to create sets. And if we don't have sets, then we don't really have a fundamental way of determining what we should define as included and what we should define as excluded. All that we can do is we can take a miut, and we can use it to exclude the most unreasonable inclusion in the ideas of Nazir. So what would be the most unreasonable thing in Naziris? The actual cellulose, right? Therefore, says Rabbi Elazar, look, you're not chayef for eating shabishta, which is the cellulose of the vine, but you are chayef if you would eat leaves and shoots. It's actually shoots and leaves, but not in the Gemara. Okay. So that would be what the result would, of course, have to be if you're dealing with ribui or miut. On the other hand, if you're darshaning with klal prado klal, then we would make a set of things. So we would compare the issues that we're trying to include in the set with the particular examples of the set that are offered. So we said, that in that event, it would explain why we're not going to include shoots and leaves, but which we are going to include immature fruit, the guharki, or tzbadar in Hebrew, and spoiled fruit. Why will we do that? Because we will make a klal prat and klal, and we will say that, look, the bottom line is that since the Torah puts this all together, what would be the overall, what would you say would be the overall ke'in ha-prat, which is the nature of the set? Well, the prat includes pre-upsolet pri, this includes pre-upsolet pri. Where does it include psolet pri? Includes psolet pri by talking about chometz yahin. And therefore, it will also include anything that could be called a pri. Is an immature pri called a pri? Yes. So therefore, it would include immature perot, and it would include spoiled perot. But that's as far as you can go. It certainly would not include leaves and shoots, which are not fruit. That would occur, that would account very simply for the difference between Rabbi Elazar and the Chachamim, correct? Everything good so far. Now, the question is, how do we know that we should have such a broad definition of the set that anything that is vaguely called a fruit and anything that is vaguely called a spoiled fruit, I mean, for heaven's sakes, that's a pretty big stretch of the envelope. Why can't it be that everything mentioned in the pasuk is mature fruit, a real fruit, not vaguely a fruit, becoming a fruit? Everything mentioned in the pasuk, even if it's a lower quality, like vinegar, is certainly not wormy and something that people won't eat. So who gave you the right to define the set as being so broad that it would include even a guharki, an immature fruit, or it would include even a wormy fruit? That does not follow. Ah, okay. Answers the Gemara, you are correct. Normally, the approach of prat klal uprat, and by the way, specifically prat klal uprat, as opposed to klal prat uklal, as we'll see later, but prat klal uprat gives you a stress on the pratim as opposed to a stress on the broadening that's provided by the klal, correct? And therefore, it would actually signal us to try to have a more restrictive definition of the set. But suppose we would apply the restrictive definition of the set to this case. What would we end up with? What would the klal end up being marba? Tell me. Absolutely nothing. Why? Because the Torah has given us such a long list of pratim that there's nothing left to include. So it's only by the broadening of the set that we end up including wormy grapes or including immature fruit, correct? If we hadn't broadened it, all we would have known is what was in the set in the first place. Real fruit, lower class fruit, like chometz, yes. We would know anyway the idea of pips and skins and pulps, all of that would be included. So what would be the point of making this a prat klal uprat? Absolutely nothing. Therefore, it must be that in this case, we have no choice but to use a broader set than otherwise we would be justified in applying to cases of prat klal uprat. So far, so good. All of that was yesterday's material. It's necessary to repeat it in order for us to get a deeper sense of what's really happened. So then the Gemara says, if that's the case, then if we would have had a prat and a klal, would we not have added everything anyway? So what's the difference? Now that you've expanded the set to such an extent, what good is the closing prat? Answers the Gemara. The point of the closing prat is to establish the PKP sequence. That's the point. And if you don't have a PKP sequence, so what you're left with is PK. There you go. All of you admirers of South Africa. So what you're left with is Prat and Clow. And what would be then the case? Then the case would be that without a PKP sequence, you would be forced to include everything except one item, because the Prat would just be there in order to alert you to the effect that the Clow at the end, which seems to be this explosive expansion without any limitation, in fact, is an explosive expansion. And everything would be included, even shoots and leaves. And the only thing that would be excluded by the Prat that comes before the Clow would be the cellulose. Is that clear? So therefore, we need that Prat at the end to teach us that we have it a PKP sequence. All right? Keep this in mind, because we're going to be analyzing the differences between the KPK sequence, the PKP sequence, and all of the alternatives. Now, so far, this makes a great deal of sense, except for one horrific problem, gentlemen. It turns out that the PK sequence itself, if it wouldn't have had the Prat at the end, would have yielded what result? The exact same result that Rabbi Elazar has. We would have been marba everything, including shoots and leaves, and we would have been mamayit shabishta. That's exactly what Rabbi Elazar said. That's not all that meaningful, you'll say, but we do have a PKP. The problem is that we don't have a PKP according to Rabbi Elazar, because madly, when we defined how Rabbi Elazar is explaining the sugya in terms of miut and riba, we darshened the pasuk with miut for riba, and he very studiously left out the closing piece. The closing piece being what we're using as the prat, which is mechartzanim adzag. Correct? This is so exciting, but you know it. It's a little bit complicated because it's using this technical terminology, but it's really very exciting. So now, if you have a complete matchup between the results of a PK sequence and a general drosha of riboy amiyute, why did we say that Rabbi Elazar has to hold of riboy amiyute? We could simply have said that Rabbi Elazar darshens this with klal prat uklal, or prat klal uprat, but there is no case over here of a closing prat, because he busily is using that for the other drasha of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, not to be confused with Rabbi Elazar himself, of course. But if Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah and Rabbi Elazar agree, so then everything makes sense without making any kind of problems about prat and klal and riboy and miut. And we're like, why are we making things so complicated? But that is a question that strikes you, or should strike you, instantly. Because yes, it's true we haven't drawn our attention yet to the fact that he managed to exclude the closing prat, but I mean, come off it, boys. It's clear from the whole discussion that that's what's been going on all along. He surreptitiously cut out the end of the pasuk from the drasha. Okay, so please keep this problem in mind in order to understand the sugya as it evolves. The Gemara does not ask this question. We're asking this question. But this is going to enable us to work out the sugya as it continues. Okay? So therefore, we have the beautiful words right at the end of yesterday's daf to tell you, Lomar Lecha, why do we have Chartzanim Atzag? To teach you this amazing rule. But koma komsha tamotse prat v'klal. If you wouldn't have had the full PKP sequence, and you would only have had a pratna klal, then you would not be able to apply any type of set theory to it. And iyata rashay lomar shuv laduna be'ein haprat. What would happen in that case is that the klal would explosively broaden the sugya to include everything. Nasa klal musaf al haprat. Ach yifrot lecha hakatuv kederach shepiret lecha benazir. So strangely enough, nazir is a place where we are taught the idea of PKP sequences, and therefore bichatzanim v'adzak. So now, what this means is that we're taking for granted, even though nobody said it, but everybody's whispering to the guy next in the next seat. You know, obviously, Reb Elozer must have told Reb Elozer about Azariah, because what gave him the right to take out the last piece of the puzzle? Shh, we'll see what happens in the rest of the show. Okay, so that's true. But now we want to take a look at it from the other point of view, because that is an incredibly sneaky and nasty way of our approaching the entire problem. Namely, well, Reb Elozer ben Azariah, of course, has to use Chartzanim Adzag like Reb Elozer ben Azariah, doesn't he? I mean, he is Reb Elozer ben Azariah. So if that's the case, he has removed Chartzanim Adzag. He has removed it from the PKP sequence. So, oh my God, doesn't that leave him up the creek without a paddle in the Mishnah? How is he reading the Mishnah and saying, well, the only thing that I disagree with is the question of how to define Chartzanim Adzag, if in reality, he must actually disagree with the whole idea, because he doesn't have the sequence that we need in order to establish a PKP. That's the point. So that's the next Gemara's question. Ula Reb Elozer ben Azariah. But you understand how sneaky this is, because this is the way that the Gemara is including the very issue that's been bothering us, but that we've been afraid to state openly for fear of causing a civil war. Why in the world did we get into the idea of miut, of riboy and miut? Okay, so according to Reb Elozer ben Azariah, if he uses b'chartzanim v'adzag to teach me she'eno chayav ach yochal shnei chartzanim v'zag, he doesn't have the closing prat, and he's stuck. So then prata minale. Well, says the Gemara, so what's the big deal? Maybe he actually holds like Rabbi Elazar. And then Rabbi Elazar would be dorish miut v'riba. So far, we've been consistent. It's the Ibai's Ema that destroys everything that we've done. The Ibai's Ema says, just because you learn, Gersh, you get back here, you're going to miss something. Oh, for heaven's sakes, that's what happens when people are. It's these headphones that are dangerous. There. So, I know that the Yam beckons. And I know that you're wearing a swimsuit underneath all of that. As I say, these Chinese surveillance balloons can see more than you know. So, the thing that destroys everything is the Ibai's Ema. The Ibai's Ema is this. Even if you're using the last words of Chartzanim v'Adzak to teach you Reb Elozer ben Azariah, that does not preclude them from being the closing prat. Because there's two different issues that are involved over here. One is the limud from Chartzanim v'Adzag, and there are numerous limudim from Chartzanim v'Adzag. Not only the special din of Reb Elozer ben Azariah, everybody needs Chartzanim Adzag to teach me the special halacha of the inappropriate consumption still being included, right? So anyway, you could say, well, we need Chartzanim. It's not the question of needing Chartzanim Adzag. remember that the concept of sequencing is exactly that, sequencing. It's not the information. It's the sequence of the information. So even if Chatzanim Hatzag is coming to tell me a halacha, what does that have to do with where it is? The sequence is insane. If you want to tell me a list of pratim, so then you've got all of those initial opening pratim, four separate pratim. Let's throw in Chatzanim Hatzag there. And then close the whole thing by saying, Mikol Asher Yaseh B'Gefen Hayayin. Why in the world say Chatzanim Hatzag after Mikol Asher Yaseh? Therefore, says the Gemara in the Ibai Seima, that the truth is, there's no real problem between maintaining the PKP sequence and still holding of Klal, not only Klal Prado Klal, but still holding of Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah's special halacha that you need to take Bichartzanim Va'adzak. And the two of them are still completely able to be darshaned side by side. So let's see that inside, please. Ibait Ema, or what you could say is that it's actually, he agrees 100% with the Rabbanan who hold of PKP, and E Sakadaita Kiryoma Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah, but the logic is that if the only point of Bichartzanim Va'adzag is to teach me the halacha of Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah, then why is the sequence as strange as it is? Why isn't this listed as the fifth prat in the prior to the klal list, which is far more reasonable? Why would the Torah lamai hilchata katve bata klal? Why did the Torah create the strange PKP sequence by learning this piece after the klal for no apparent reason? The only reason would seem to be to maintain the sequence. Therefore, we know both things. Shmamina. So that teaches us not only the halacha of Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah, but the sequence per se teaches us to use this as a PKP. That's the point. So let me deny nu. Bichlal uprat. But wait, hold on a second. If the sequence is ultimately so important, how do we know that the Torah didn't put it here to teach me the sequence? How do we know that you even have a right to take more information out of it than the sequence? You see? If you're telling me, think about the way, just from a literary point of view, what do the words mean? Anything that comes from the grape, from pips to skins. Doesn't that make perfectly good sense, literally speaking, without teaching me any new information? Yes. So you say, okay, but what does the Torah have to give me a story? It's giving me a story because it's teaching me a sequence, but not the contents of the information. So how do you know that you have a right to darshan it for its informational content as well? Says the Gemara, because there is a very powerful hint that there is information hidden here. What's the hint? The hint is the absurd distinction of the Loshon Yochid and the Loshon Rabim. Why does it say Bichartzanim plural, Hatzag singular? Make them both singular. I mean, you're talking about what? You're just talking about a part, Chartzanim and Zagim. Or Bichartzan Hatzag. What do you mean Bichartzanim Hatzag? For heaven's sakes, how insensitive could you be? So obviously, says Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah, this is teaching us a brand new piece of information. Gavi, help, help, I'm under attack. A brand new, brand new piece of information, which is that in fact, the Chartzanim must inhabit the Zagim, and they also have a specific relationship to the Zag that they inhabit. That's the point. Here, I see you can't find it. Take mine and hand it back. Okay. So let's see that inside. Because Ema Kule Lahudiata, maybe the whole thing comes for the point of the sequencing. No, because Im Kain Lichtov, either Shnei Chartzanim and Shnei Zagim, or singular Chartzan and Zag. Why would you say something so strange? L'ma Yilchata Katav Rachmana Mi Chartzanim V'Adzag. Shma Amina, so you see that we have two separate points. One point is the sequence, L'midrash Be'Klal Prat, and the second point is the internal information. Ikenami L'midrash Be'Achi Yochal Shnei Chartzanim V'Zag. Excellent. What do you say? Great. So far, so
yeah,
far.
Let's drink to that.
Which reminds me, let's give tzedakah for matanot le'avyonim to that. Don't forget, it's getting closer. Okay. Now, of course, this leaves us in a terrible pickle. Because if Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah could have maintained the PKP sequence, even with his drasha, which we're suggesting here, then that means that Rabbi Elazar is really without any basis at all, so it would appear. On the one hand, we're claiming that the whole point is that he's darshaning ribui miut, and yet when he darshans ribui miut, he leaves out the closure. And therefore, he ends up with including everything, including shoots and leaves. But I thought we just said that even if you leave out the last piece, it doesn't change the sequencing. So now what? Now we don't even know how Rebbe Elazar got away with the whole thing. Why isn't he including the end of the sequence in his drasha? And if for some reason he's arguing about this and he holds like the first teretz and not the Ibay Sema, and he holds that you cannot actually learn both the sequencing and the actual information from the same pasuk, which is apparently what originally we thought when we said Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah has to hold of Rebbe Elazar, and then if that's the case, why do we need to change it to ribui and miut? Why don't we simply say he doesn't have a key PKP structure, and therefore he's stuck with the same thing that the Rabbanan said they would have been stuck with if you only had a prat and a klal, and not a prat, klal, or prat? Where do we get off with this new idea that he's got a ribui miut? The whole thing is absolutely arbitrary, you see. How can you even yawn, Baruch Avram? Good heavens.
I said legamre.
Okay. Now, the secret to this entire issue is to be found, incredibly, in the next insane question. And the next insane question is, Rebbe Elazar, who darshan this with miut and riba, how does he know PKP? What? He doesn't! As all the Rishonim ask. What do you mean, how does he know PKP? I thought we've been saying that Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah darshans the Torah with ribui amiyute. So what are you asking? This is a nutty question. What do you mean, how does he know PKP? He doesn't know PKP. And as a matter of fact, the words minolan? What do you mean minolan? How do we know? Forget about how does he know, which is the way, how do we know that he holds a PKP? And that is the way that some of the Rishonim are forced to redefine the Gemara. That minole doesn't mean how does he know? I don't know that he knows. How do I know? That's the question. Where do we see that Rebbe Elazar holds a PKP at all? And here is what I said. There's only one approach in the entire sugya that makes sense out of this question and thereby answers all of the issues that we have been raising. And that is the approach in Taisus of the Ri. Now, as I said, there are other Balei Taisus who don't agree with the Ri's approach, but the Ri's approach is the most internally consistent approach, in my opinion. And therefore, the way that he understands the Gemara, and the way that we will understand the Gemara, because it's a clear-cut definition, is that the Gemara knows that Rabbi Elazar must hold of PKP, Gufa, because of the fact that he darshaned the way that he darshaned in the idea of Naziris. It's self-contained. Because you have to ask yourself, why doesn't Rabbi Elazar hold that we should utilize the last piece of the sequence? I don't care how he's darshaning. Why did he leave out the last part of the sequence? Especially when we just explained that even if you want to learn that this is like Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, who holds, according to the second approach, you hold a PKP, there's no problem because you still have a sequence of PKP, even if you're darshaning it to tell me Mechatzani Ma'adzag. So why doesn't he utilize, even if he needs it for Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, which we've been whispering to each other, he must hold of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. But now we've said that doesn't change anything, because even if you do hold like Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, you don't have a problem. You can still incorporate this thing for its sequential value besides its informational value, right? It must be, therefore, suggests the read that this is where the Gemara gets this point from. The only explanation is that the very reason that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah does not darshan in his words anything about the last piece is not simply that he holds a Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, but it's because he agrees that there is an unusual case where we darshan PKP, meaning that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah holds that the Torah in general is meant to be approached along the lines of Ribui Umiyute.
Sorry, does Rabbi mean Rabbi Elazar or Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah now?
I mean Rabbi Elazar.
Okay.
So now, he must hold, therefore, that he is faced with a choice. He's faced with the choice of darshaning things as a PKP or darshaning it Beribu Yomute. He learns Kola Tera Kula, the way he was Makabal, the way to learn the Tera is in terms of Ribu Yomute and not sequencing. And we're going to see that the Rabbeinu Tam explains that Ribui Umiyute is not sensitive to sequencing, the way Klal Prada Klal is sensitive to sequencing. Therefore, when it comes to any case where you have a PKP sequence, Rabbi Elazar holds that that teaches you that this is the one, because isn't it strange? I mean, come on, PKP is weird. It's a very strange structure. As we saw, you read the Pasuk and it just strikes you as being off the wall. I mean, if you're telling me a list of pratim, then tell me the pratim. Don't throw one last prat just as, you know, the end, just to close it, when the thing is weird. So therefore, Rabbi Elazar knows that where we have a strange sequence, that then we're being told, oh, now wait a minute, boys, this is not the kind of place where you want to just deal with Miat and Reboy. This is the kind of place where sequence is all. Okay. Comes along Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah to Nazir. And he says to himself, okay, I got two choices. One choice is to acknowledge that the sequencing here is the most important issue. And if that's the case, then that means that I'm being told by the structure of a pasuk, do not apply miyat ribui miyat. Apply PKP. So if I do that, I'm going to be violating the standards by which I'm darshaning all over the Torah, and I'm taking a unique sequence in Naziras and darshaning it differently. And in doing so, I lose out on shooting and leaving, which, of course, is a modern-day form of fun. I wouldn't want to leave out that, would I? So if that's the case, if I've got to choose between accepting that this is a violation of Ribui Miyute by darshaning it with PKP and taking the sequence as possible, I could be able to darshan this along my general approach of Ribui Miyute, which is the way that I was taught to darshan, and then I would explain that the only reason that this thing was thrown in over here was for its information, namely the case of the Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah, strange interrelationship of the pips to the skin. Fine. I think that I would rather do that than to create a PKP which would violate the norms of Drush. That's how he understands. In which case, it means that the very reason that Rebbe Elazar left out, and that's why we leave it till now to raise, you see, the very reason that Rebbe Elazar left out in his drasha, the closing piece, was not simply because he's using it for Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah. It's because of Ribui Miyute. That's what forces him to learn that this is only coming for Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah and is not to be looked at as a correct sequence, which is weird. And obviously, if the idea of PKP is itself viewed as a violation of norms, so I'd rather darshan this with Ribui Miyute. That's why we begin the original sugya by saying his entire approach is Ribui Miyute. And yet, the very fact that he leaves out the last piece proves that he was forced to. Why? He must hold of PKP in special cases of sequencing. Well, where does he know that from? That's the Gemara's kash. Beautiful chat. Stunning. Self-contained. Poetic. Absolutely amazing. So then the entire Gemara makes perfectly good sense. And now what we're going to look at is one of the most fundamental drushes in the Torah that nobody argues with, and that he was Mekabel, Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah, which is one of our most beloved PKP structures that everybody knows about, and that therefore forces him into acknowledging that there certainly is a place for PKP in everyone's life. Okay, so what is that drush? So Rebbe Elazar the Darsh Miyut Variba. Where did he get the idea that PKP is going to cancel Ribui Miyute if it appears as a sequence? Omer Rebbe Abo, Nafkele Mihaikra. He knows it from the stunning implications of PKP in this pasuk, one of the most famous applications in Kol HaTorah Kula. Ki yitein ish el re'eu chamor o shor o se. Okay. So here we're talking about a shomer soch. And it lists a bunch of different animals. Chamor, a shor, or se. And then it goes on to say, v'cho behema lishmor. Okay. So then, let's understand that. The chol behema is a klal. The chamor o shor o se, which begins, is a prat. The closing word lishmor is a prat. Why? Because it means that only animals that are included under shmira are going to be included in this halacha. Suppose you give someone your pet cobra to watch. That's not included because a cobra is not watchable in the normal sense that you can watch an animal. Somebody gives you his pet lion or his vicious viciously trained sea otter, whatever it is, it's not shmirable. And therefore, lishmar is also a prat. So we're left with a PKP structure. And what does this teach me? That klal prat uklal, iata dan, ela ke'in haprat. So that you have to be talking about an amazing thing that we learn from here is, as we learn in Bava Metzia, the most incredible thing is that what it is that's included in the din of Shmira, besides the obvious information that's here about otters and cobras, is the fact that they need to be metaltaline, they need to be movable, they need to have value, intrinsic value. And that gives the famous overall ruling that everyone knows. Prat lekarka ot, there is no din of shmira on karka. Prat lishtarot, because there's no din of intrinsic value in a bond. And prat la'avadim, which are hukshu lekarkot. Everybody knows this is one of the earliest Kabbalah in Klal Yisrael of the dinim of shmira. And it applies in so many issues, benogea, taking a shvua, and so on and so forth, throughout the sugyas of mishpatim. And this is one of our first understandings of a PKP sequence. Therefore, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah understands that where things are put in that fashion, you're not derish them as miyot and ribui, and there's not a single shita that argues on this. And therefore, Rabbi Elazar must be stuck with darshaning a PKP where there's no other explanation. Lovely. So far, everything is stunning. Okay. Continues. Rava says, well, we've got other things that also seem to be generally accepted halachas that are only derivations of a PKP sequence. I will give you more complex and less well-known ones, okay? How about this pasuk? V'im min hatzon korbano, min hakvasim o min haizim lo'ola, zachar tamim yakriven. Now, I say, if the moment that you find the word min, you know that we're talking about a prat, because min means not all, just some. All right, so you have to figure out what the just some is. In this case, there's machlokas rishonim about what the just some is. The Rush's approach, which is problematic because we have other psukim that teach the same information, as Tosis points out, and therefore has another approach. But basically, we'll take the Rush's approach because it's very simple. The Tosis' approach deals with the question of how old the animal is. Does it have to be within its first year, or can it be a second year, or whatever? Okay, well, we'll take the Rush. So, min hatzon, we darshan to mean not animals that have been used for an aveira. So, if you have something that was used for aveira zora, or was used for some kinky sex, then that is possible. So it has to be min hatzon. Okay. Then it says, so that is a prat. But then it says tzon. So the min is a prat. The tzon itself is a klal. And then we have kvasim ve'izim, which is a further description of pratim. This makes a prat klal a prat and tells us iatadan elekein prat. What would that mean? Ah. So here's the question. Is the relationship to an avera the problem? If a relationship to the avera is a problem, then that would mean that an animal that was used for, let's say, plowing a field bikilayim with a different species, or let's say a shor that was used for plowing while you had covered its mouth and you were over on lotaksom shor, Bidisha, I should say plowing, but for Disha, for, how do you say that? Winnowing or threshing.
Threshing.
So, yeah. So those kind of things would also be excluded, except for the fact that we made a PKP structure. Since we make a PKP structure, what we're saying is that it has to be something that's in the body, and that's the meaning of the tzon. The things that are defined biologically instead of by events, that I happen to have hooked up this animal to a plow together with another species, that's not its body. That's something that was imposed on it. However, kinky sex or the use of it as an avodah zarah is a bodily usage. So it's the tzon element of it directly that is now being affected. Therefore, the klal prat uklal is that it would include all of those things that are violations of its body, but to teach me that you shouldn't think that you can extend that to include any animal that had been used for an avera of some kind. That is not true. So therefore, it says Rava, you see from here that the structure of PKP is very useful in preventing you from making these explosive kinds of broad statements, which are not true. Namely, don't use an animal that has been used for an avera. Not true. How do we know it's not true? PKP. And therefore, Rabbi Elazar knows the din of PKP. Now, Rav Yehuda Midiskarta says, well, I mean, you can go, instead of waiting till there, I mean, you could have started at the beginning, in the beginning of Vayikra, the very opening, the second pasuk in Vayikra. You could have had the same drasha of a PKP, because over there it says, Adam ki yakriv mikem korban la'ashem mina beima mina bakar uminatzon takrivo et korban chem. Let me show you how this is also essentially a PKP. My question is, are shor habar included in the dinim of korbanos? You want to bring a wild ox. It's not domesticated. It lives out in the desert. So there is my question. So here's the pasuk. The moment that it says min abeima, the word min limits it because it now means not all types of animals, only domesticated animals. But then it says beima, which is a klal, and then it says bakar vetzon, which is more prat. Well, that's classic PKP. And therefore, iatadan eleke in haprat. And because of that, we know that what some animals, which would mean not chayot animals, like let's say buffalo or deer, they're not included. But what about a wild ox? Oh, so the klal would include even something that's wild because we have it as a PKP. In which case, if you have a domesticated type species, which is actually wild, it doesn't matter. So it's a feral ox, but nonetheless, it's part of a species that's generally defined as domesticated and that you can bring to the Mizbeah. There you go. So why did you wait, says Rav Yehuda? Why did you wait? It's Rav Yehuda Midiskarta, actually. Says Rav Yehuda Midiskarta to Rava, if you could have taken the first pasuk in Vayikra, why did you wait until the psukim about tzon? Says Rava, don't be silly. We can't learn anything from this as PKP. Because if this were the makor of Rebbe Elazar's PKP, I would have said, listen, the word habehema always includes chaya, doesn't it? Chaya or bichlal behema. We see that all over the Torah. In which case, min habehema could just as easily tell us certain species of chayas. I mean, why would it tell us not chayas? That doesn't make sense. The word behemah is equally chaya or behemah all over. So that's really the discarta. What are you talking about, man? You can't look at a PKP structure as being isolated, each word in itself. The point is that the sequence is a holistic sequence. The moment that you get to the end of the sequence that says the idea of Bokar Vitzon, right? Because that's what you say at the end of it. So then how could you possibly say that it's a inclusive of Chayot? The Torah's made it very clear. There ain't one Chaya listed here, buddy. So it's got to be part of your herd or your flock. And don't give me this other stuff of your deer farm, okay? So how could I have thought that we would have understood that Behema, that Chaya would be Bechlal Behema in this case? And therefore, I say it is a perfect PKP structure, Ve'inat Adan Elokein HaPrat, and I stick with my Makar for Reb Elazar. Now, none of this is really all that important, what the Makar of Reb Elazar is, but the idea is that Reb Elazar agrees that there's a standard system of drasha, and that only at times that the Torah has gone out of its way to create a nutty sequence, then we apply the concept of sequencing, which leads us into a completely different idea of sets. And that's called the dinim of klal prado klal. In this case, it's PKP. Whew. Says the Gemara, but do we have an actual prototype of the whole concept of sequencing that leads to set creation that the Rabbanan are claiming is the mocker of all drushas? I understand the unique sequencing of PKP, but what about according to the Chachamim? So where does this whole thing come from, that the normal way that we look at the structure of the Torah is in terms of klal uprat? Ah, that's another beautiful and famous and lovely din that everybody knows. Because where you're talking about your Meister Sheni money, so it says to bring it up to Yerushalayim, v'natata akesef v'chol asher ta'aveh nafshecha. Use that money to buy anything you feel like eating, drinking, anything that you like, yum yum. And then it says, babakar u'batzon u'bayayin u'bashechar. That's a lot of protein. So b'chol asher ta'aveh nafshecha is very klali, isn't it? So it starts off with a klal. Then it says, but it's not quite anything. It's got to be boker, tzon, yayin, or shechar. But then it goes in and says, well, I didn't really mean to limit you just to that. U'v'chol asher tishalcha nafshecha. A strange sequence that seems to be repeating the opening again. Anything that you're in the mood of. Chazar v'kalal. This, therefore, say the Rabbanan, leads us to klal prado klal. And the rule is, iatadan elake in haprat. Ma haprat meforash pri mipri vigidule karka, afko pri mipri vigidule karka. The point over here is that all of the examples are talking about biological constructs that are created out of prior information. So that means that they need to be either some type of DNA construct. They could be a plant, they could be an animal, they could be a bird, but it has to be a pre-mi-pre. So it has to be created out of prior information. And there's one additional point, and that is that everything that we talk about here in the Pratim are all things that derive their nourishment from the surface of the planet. And therefore, it excludes fish. So what we're talking about over here, things that are gidule karka, of ko pri mi pri, the gidule karka, which leads us to say, Esav is a phony. Because what did he do with his miser? He bought salt. But salt is not a DNA product. Fine. That's the end of that. And it also means that your gefilte fish cannot be bought with Meisr money. Oh, my gosh. Maybe gefilte fish is different than standard fish. Maybe gefilte fish do grow on the ground. I don't know. But in any event, the idea over here is that everybody knows, and this is a disaster for modern manufacturing. Because the third thing that's excluded from here is the most expensive thing that you'd want to buy with your Meisr Sheni money, water. Nobody ever understood what that meant. Well, we do now. So if you want to buy your water, you cannot use your Meisr Sheni money for your beautiful bottle of Italian mineral water. There you go. It's not included. Let's remember what it is that we've reached up until this point, which is really quite remarkable. And we discovered that we've got two very different approaches to the drushas in the Torah, which we thought were exclusive, basically. We're mutually exclusive. One of them is a concept of the Torah as klal uprat. And in that sense, the Torah is constantly speaking of sets, expansions of sets, limitations of sets, interrelationships of various types of sets. And all of this was based on the idea of sequencing, so that you can have a prat klal uprat, you can have a klal prat uklal, you can have a klal uprat, prat uklal, and each one of those presents a slightly different solution to the information that the Torah is giving. The other approach is called ribui umiute. And ribui umiute is not a matter of set, but rather a matter of various indications that we're meant to expand or we're meant to limit things. But we don't deal with them in terms of sets. So we don't see them as interrelating to each other. It's not that the miut and ribui are themselves a singularity in which one piece is part of the other, but rather they take us in different directions and allow us to make the accommodations in terms of what appears most reasonable. So what would be the most reasonable extent of the ribui, and what would be the most reasonable thing to be memayet? So, for instance, in the case that we have over here, by the nazir, obviously the most reasonable thing to be memayet would be shabishta, which means just cellulose, which would have nothing to do with any of the other categories that we spoke about. It's not a pre, it's not psolet pre, it's not immature pre, it's not spoiled pre, it's not unusual forms of pre, like pips and seeds and separated grape pulp. It's not all of those issues we dealt with. And it's not even edible leaves and edible shoots. It's something which has absolutely no connection at all to the real concept of eating from the vine. And therefore, we would exclude shabishta. And in the end, it turns out that this is the way we understood Reb Elazar's shita. That since Reb Elazar agrees that you can actually shoot and leave when you're a nazir, and you'd be chayev if you did, because shoots and leaves are included in the Yisrei Naziras, and only shabishta is excluded. So he must hold of the concept of ribui umiute, so that we were left with one concept, one item, I should say, to exclude, and that's precisely what we do. Mashenkein the chachamim who darshan klal pratu klal, so they create a set, and this is the set of what? So it turned out, the Gemara said, it must be the set of all even pre-upsolet pre. And therefore, it would include even things like rotten kalim, because rotten anavim, because we're basing that on the idea of the wine, which is broken down into vinegar. So we'll expand it to include a broken down grape, but we will also include immature guharki grapes. And that's what has not been listed at all, and therefore we extend it in both directions. The reason that we extend it that far, what gives us the right to extend it beyond the actual examples that are given, to this extent. Normally, we just say that we can extend it by finding things that are directly similar to the examples. But a spoiled grape is not similar to the example of grape, and an immature grape is not similar fully to the example of grape, is it? So the Gemara explains that in the event that there would be no purpose whatever served by creating a set, because there would be nothing additional to include in the set that hasn't already been mentioned in the pasuk itself, then obviously we need to expand it the first notch we can. And therefore, the general meaning of a fruit does not have to be the specific fruit that is expressed in the pasuk, which is a grape and a raisin. It could even be an immature grape. Must be. That must be its expansion. That's the way that we understood it initially. Then, yesterday, we came to recognize that in actuality, it isn't that simple, because we have the idea at the end of the pasuk of the Micharzanim ve'adzag, which according to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, is coming to tell me a new halacha. So it contains specific information that where we expand it into the contents of the grape, they have to be matched contents. So in other words, it would be the pips and the skin of the same grape that would be mechayev you. And that's like a very big chiddush, and he learns that out from the closing prat. Now, we originally thought that we could keep things simple, and that anybody that would use that closing word, micharzanim atzak, which is ostensibly the closing prat, would not have it, if he's going to be using it to tell me that special din of only the pips from the same grape's skin, so then it would not be available to teach a klal prat uklal. That's what we thought. And therefore, we ended up with an interesting situation that according to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, we should not have a klal prat uklal. Because as the Gemara pointed out, if you leave out the closing prat, which would happen if you took out Micharzanim Atzag from the sequence, then you would be left with a prat and klal. But the din of a prat and klal is that the klal expands endlessly, possibly besides one item, possibly not. We'll talk about that later today. And therefore, you need the closing prat to turn it into a sequential PKP, which then makes it possible to learn out a set. And therefore, we had a problem. But according to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, there is no PKP because he removed it from the equation. And we thought that removal from the equation is clear because when it turned out that Rabbi Elazar explained his shita, not to be confused with Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, in which he darshened miut veribui, he actually did leave out that last piece. And all he had was a miut and a ribui. And we took for granted that the reason that he left out the last piece was because he considered it to be there for its informational content, namely pip and skin relationship, as opposed to actually closing the sequence. So we assumed that the same thing would be true about Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. He would also have to remove it from the sequence. So the alternative, of course, would be simple. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah holds like Rabbi Elazar, the same way apparently Rabbi Elazar himself holds like Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, and that was fine. But then the Gemara throws in a monkey wrench into that process. And the Gemara offers an alternative and says that when you use something for its informational content that has nothing to do with utilizing it for its position in a sequence, and the same information would have been just as useful if it would have been given in the list of the pratim. So we would have been talking about Anavim, and then Mishrat Anavim, Anavim Lachim, the Yaveshim, and Micharzanim Vatzak. And then we would have heard the klal, the Kol Asher Yaaseh Migefen Hayayin, right? So why did the Torah sequence it so weirdly into a PKP? Must be that there's two different issues. One is to tell me the sequence, the other is to give me the specific information. Now, the reason that that throws a monkey wrench into everything is because then how do we explain the fact that Rabbi Elazar, who we excused as giving this information, purposing, takes it out of the sequence, and therefore he was darshaning this only as a miut and a ribui, and he never mentioned the last piece, didn't talk about miut, ribui, miut. Why did he do that? And therefore we came to understand that the truth is that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah really agrees that PKP applies, but only in unique cases. And the way that he sees it, and we're going to see later on that the Rabbeinu Tam's understanding of the entire nature of PK sequences versus Biyut and Ribui actually makes a great deal of sense of this. But the way that Rabbi Elazar understands or was Mekabel is that there are two different ways of utilizing the Limudim in the Torah. Normally, we look at things in terms of Ribui and Miyuti, and we talk about what is most reasonable in terms of expansion and most reasonable in terms of Miyut. Now, we can only continue if Dr. Barry gives us a smile, because it's Torah has to be learned by Simcha Gedela, especially during Adar, where we're coming to Kimu Vekiblu and all this, and I'm getting so sad. There, now I feel better. Okay. So, therefore, Rebbe Elazar also, however, recognizes that in cases where the Torah goes out of its way to create a strange sequence, then that means that we're meant to look at it from the point of view of sequence, which is dafka, the concepts of set, so that we have different sets, which in different ways of creating the sequence gives us different information output. And we ended up proving this by recognizing that everybody, including the ostensible belief of Rabbi Elazar that we don't darshan prat klal uprat, actually did darshan prat klal uprat in the famous pasuk of Maaser Sheni, where over there the Torah tells us what it is that you can buy with your Maaser Sheni money, and we ended up making a very beautiful set of only things that are generated by DNA and the only things that survive on the surface of the output of the earth, which excluded things like fish and things like water and things like salt and so on, right? And he ascribed to that. And that is based on a classic PKP. So clearly, Rabbi Elazar agrees that there are circumstances of PKP. And therefore, what we understood was that Rabbi Elazar basically had to make a decision about how to view the issue over here. If he's going to take the pasuk as sequential, so then he's going to be forced to darshan it as PKP. If he can find a reason that it's not there for sequential purposes, but it's there in order to give us specific information, then he can revert to the normal standard, which of course is preferable, of darshaning it as Ribui Amiyut. Therefore, since he has the informational content of Micharsanim Adzag, which Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah has expressed, he says to himself, I'd rather use it for that and ignore the sequencing. Because if you hold that the Torah is sequenced normally, so then, of course, you'll say the Iba Yisema. Well, obviously, it also has separate informational content, and it has its sequencing information. But I don't believe that the Torah is created normally to teach you about sequencing. It's only when the sequencing is undeniable that you're forced into a vision of PKP, you see? So according to me, if this is coming to tell me the din of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah about Chartzanim Atzag, I'm not forced to withdraw the normal din of Ribui and Miyut and go into a new world of PKP. I'll ignore the PKP because I don't see it. I only see good old-fashioned Miyut v'Ribui. That's the way that we came out with the sugya yesterday, according to how it is that the Ri explains things, which is really brilliant, clear, self-contained. Okay. So we got up to, therefore, the Michde. And let's start from over there. So Michde, Klal Uprat V'Chlal, comes out telling you, Ke'en HaPrat, correct? That's what we said. And we're going to be marred by anything Ke'en HaPrat. But isn't all of that information in the original Prat V'Chlal? What's the point of the closing Prat? Because, I mean, if you're telling me I can only dash it with a closing prat, then you're telling me that I wouldn't have said that I can learn it out as a general rule and therefore a set. Well, what would I have thought? What is the last prat for? Asks the Gemara. Mayahani, what does it help us? Ah, says the Gemara, as I explained, it helps by turning this into lo usufi kol dedomile. If we would only have a klal uprat, I would have said ein bichlal ela mashe beprat, which we need to explain. What's the sense in such a thing? And we'll get to that when we see the differences between the various limudim. And I hope that's not a sneaking off into the bedroom. I'm assuming it's just to get a nice one of those supposed ginger ales. Yes, yes, of course. Ginger ale. The old solution. So, not a gin and tonic, chas v'shalom. Yes, yes, I know that you keep one of those handies. He's always got a can of Canada Dry just to prove it. We want to see what's behind you. That's what we want to see. So, okay, all right, so that makes sense. So then I have another question then. So then in the event that we have a prat klal uprat, so what's the deal over there? That we're going to be marbe everything like the prat, right? So then what would be the point of the last prat if we had a prat and a klal? So we have all of the information. Here are the contents of the set. Here is the statement that these pratim are meant to be made into a rule. So why isn't that enough? Why do we need to close it again with another prat at the end? Mayahani. Ah, because that's because ilav prata batra. Ah, if we wouldn't have closed it with the closing prat, then I would have understood it to mean that na'asa klal mosafala prat. Now the klal is coming to tell us that there's an explosive expansion and that we would therefore be marba all things. Now, again, as I said, we're going to explain the logic of the klal prat and prat klal in a moment. But first, let's take a look at the implications of all of the various types of limudim. So what the Gemara is saying is, if you have a klal uprat, then the prat would redefine the klal and would limit it, and you wouldn't be able to create a set. If you had a prat and klal, the klal would redefine things, and you would not have a set. Of course, it would be in opposite directions. If it was a prat and klal, then the klal would be an explosive expansion, and therefore would include anything. And if you have a klal and a prat, the prat would be an explosive, so to speak, a de-explosive implosion, in which case you would be able to be marba but nothing. So you need to have the sequence. Okay. Now, the point is, however, that we had two different types of sequences. We had a PKP sequence, and we had a KPK sequence. Well, what's the difference between them, asks the Gemara. Haven't we just worked it out that mirte, trei klali uprata, v'trein prata uklala. So whether the sequence consists of two Ks or consists of two Ps, they end up being the same, namely, ke'ein prata daininan. We've been saying all along, klal prat uklal ein b'chlal elamashe b'prat, or prat klal uprat ein b'chlal elamashe b'prat. So what's the difference? You surely can't be telling me that the sequence is irrelevant if the whole thing is based on the nature of the sequence. So what about according to us? I understand. According to Rebbe Lozer, the sequencing itself is the trigger for a change in how we dash. Okay, but we don't hold that. We hold kola tera kula. We're going to be derish as klal prat uklal, right? So if that's the case, what's the difference between a klal prat uklal and a prat klal uprat? Answers the Gemara, the difference is on how to define the members of the set. Remember that whenever we have a list of items, we will probably end up not just with one commonality, but with a number of commonalities, such as, for instance, the one that we just looked at. We were talking over there about things that are created through DNA information, plus the fact that they also are nourished by the Earth's surface, right? Those are two things. Now, when we have the set, we have a basic question. Is the set defined by the common denominator of the set? Or is the set defined as all things that would resemble one or the other? So therefore, if you would have, let's say, fish, so I would say, well, fish are generated from DNA. So they match that part of the klal prat uklal or the prat klal uprat, right? but they don't match the common denominator because they're not nourished from things on the surface. So do I need them to match completely? Or would it be enough if they matched in only one way? This is a very fundamental question about the nature of the set that we're being taught, isn't it? Absolutely. So if that's the case, then there's a big difference between a klal prat klal and a prat klal prat. And the difference is, because of the sequencing, are we more focused on the expansion of the set, or are we more focused on the specificity of the set? If you have a PKP, so then you're obviously oriented towards P's than K's, right? And mind your P's and K's. And if that's the case, that would be telling us that in order to add something to the set, it would have to be a perfect match. And therefore, fish are not included, which is correct. Fish are not included. Why? Because that limud was a PKP limud. But suppose it would have been a KPK limud. Oh, then fish would have been included because they are DNA products. You see? So that, says the Gemara, that's the difference. The difference is that Ika, the ilutartin klali uprata, if you would have had a PKP, a KPK, so then if you find another item which matches your set, even in one out of numerous ways, afilu b'chad tzad, even if it matches in one way, so that in our case, if we would have had a KPK instead of what we do have in the din of Meiser, then we would have matched up the fish to the DNA. And we would have said, okay, so then we'll include fish, which would allow you to buy your gefilte fish with your Meiser money when you're out there in Yerushalayim. And that would be a major change, you must admit, in the entire culture. So the difference, therefore, between a PKP and a KPK is massive. Because if it's on the other hand, if we've got trei prati v'klala, which is what we do have in that case, so then only if you find a matching member to the set that matches in two ways, iika prata, meaning in all ways, you've got a prata domi mishneit stadim, then you'll be marva. But if it's only similar, but it's not a match, then it's not included in the set. Great? Great. Isn't this fun? It's amazing. I think it's really amazing. Okay. Michta. Now, another problem that we've got is when we've got a prat and a klal, not a prat, klal, prat. Okay? So the klal, basically, you said, is explosive. And it's nasa klal musaf ala prat. And because of that, you will no longer have a set. And it's Rabbi Kol Mili. But isn't that true about a miyad and a ribui? That's true about a miyad and a ribui too, isn't it? Miyad v'riba nami. Don't we say the klal is that miyad v'riba riba hakol, it's Rabbi Kol Mili. So then if that's the case, it really doesn't matter in non-sequential things whether you darshan klal uprat or you darshan ribui miyad. But we've seen all over the place that we've made a big deal about whether we darshan all of the Torah, whether it is sequential or not sequential, in ribui miyut or klal or prat. So how come we're making a big deal about something that seems to yield exactly the same results? Answers the Gemara, there's a big difference between them. Now, the way that the Gemara is phrased over here is disastrous because it seems to contradict our own perek and it seems to contradict everything that we know about the normal flow of klal uprat versus miyad and ribui. So the Gemara says over here, Ika, the big difference is that when you're talking about a prat and klal, in our case, let's say, you would be marva even all things. Namely, you would include the alim and the lulavim. But if you were darshaning miyat v'riba, then you would only include the lulavim. You would not include the alim. So the first problem with this is that that's ridiculous. We just said that according to Rabbi Elazar, the reason that he is marbe both alim and lulavim is because he doesn't hold of klal uprat and he does hold of ribui miyat. And now we're saying if you hold of ribui miyat, then you do not have a ribuy of alim velulavim. That's nuts. So that's the first crazy problem. So to understand that crazy problem, Tosfos says, well, apparently, and I mentioned this earlier when I suggested that there might be yet a sixth quality in the standards of foodstuffs for Nazir. And that is that Tosfos suggests, well, maybe there's a difference between softer leaves and harder leaves. And he was talking about softer leaves, and this would have included even harder leaves, which is harder to believe. And we'd better leave it behind than try some other approach. Because anyway, it doesn't deal with the overall question of, I thought it was the other way around. So in order to understand this fully, I think there's one simple answer, of course, which is the fact that many of the Rishonim have an opposite girsa in the Gemara. So that solves the whole issue. Okay, if there's an opposite girsa, so then that's fine. And there are quite a few Rishonim that bring, that they actually speak out, that they found the opposite girsa in the older manuscripts of the Gemara. Okay. But if we darshan it this way, then the most likely approach is the approach of the Rabbi Avraham Nahar, but it's brought over here also in the Tosfos and some of the other Mefarshim, that when it says Alim Velulavim over here, it does not mean specifically Alim Velulavim at all. It's just giving you a general term that is Lav Davka. And what it's actually saying is that we would be marbe ultimately, meaning even shabishta, we would be marbe possibly. And others would be marbe whatever it is that you think. I don't know what the furthest thing is, and I'm not coming to discuss that because that's not what we have. So I'm not interested in giving you the details. I'm just telling you that you would go to town. Masha Einkein, if you got a mia veriba, then you would not be marbe the alim, which over here means shabishta or whatever the heck it means, the furthest thing. Okay, you can't say much about that because you don't really have much of a choice. Now, what is the logic behind the idea over here? So the Rabbeinu Tam articulates the logic, but he says that he's basing himself really on Rashi, who gives a lot of the approaches, but he has his unique take on things. The Rabbeinu Tam's unique take on things is that the concept of miut v'riba completely disregards sequencing. And that whenever the Gemara talks about ribui, miut v'ribui, as opposed to klal, prat, uklal, that doesn't mean it seriously. It's just saying, well, if there are no prats and there are no klal, and the prat turns into a miut, and the klal turns into a ribui, so then you don't have to worry about sequencing. That's what it really means. And therefore, the concept of there being a miut, ribui, miut, says Rabbeinu Tam, is completely imaginary. There is no such animal, because there is no meaning to the sequence if you don't darshan klal, prat, uklal. So that's the first yesod of the Rabbeinu Tam. As far as what is the logic between all of this, so that the Rabbeinu Peretz speaks out here, which Tosfos brings, and he bases it on Rashi. And he says like this, as Rashi explains it, the interrelationship of klal, prat, uklal is that we would have two different ways of understanding it, depending on what the sequence is. So if we just have a prat and a klal, then what that would mean is that the relationship between the two of them is one defines the other. So if the prat comes first, then the klal is coming to say, you saw what I just mentioned? That's actually a klal. And I just gave you an example of the klal. There's nothing that's not included in this klal. If you have a klal and a prat, you say, you know what I just said? Well, this is what I mean. There is an instantiation of that klal, and this is the instantiation. Well, if that's the case, then what would be the point, the klal, of even mentioning it, right? I mean, what do I need the instantiation if there's only one case anyway? And what would be the meaning of first giving me an instantiation if the rule includes everything? That's the obvious question about that type of approach to prat uklal, where there's no specific three-way sequence. You understand? So the answer to that is, as Rabbeinu Tam explains it over here, that actually what the Klal and Prat is coming for, and what the Prat and Klal is coming for, is to make certain that you don't utilize other information to create changes in the halakha that I'm coming to tell me. So in other words, let's say if I come to tell you that this is a klal and a prat, and you have, let's say, a gzeirah shavah or a mamatzinu elsewhere that would allow you to add additional things to the prat if I had just told you that prat, right? But because I said it to you as a klal u prat, it's as if I've added an addendum to say, do not add. This and only this is the instantiation of this rule. So even though you have a makor somewhere else for expansion, you must not use that makor somewhere else. Okay, so this he gives examples of. The opposite is true in the other case, in which you have a reason based on a gzera shava, on a mamatzinu, on a kal v'chomer, whatever approach you would be taking. In the case where you have the prat and the klal, to limit it, it's coming to tell you, do not use other information. The Pasuk wants you to know that this is meant to be an absolute klal without further reservation. That's the meaning of it. But it's not there in order to provide you with a set. It's only when there's a sequence that it's providing you with a set. How expansive is the set? And how much do you have to match up another thing in order to make it a member of that set? That depends whether it's a PKP or whether it's a KPK. Okay, so that basically wraps up the issues over here so far in this amazing Nazir Sugya of the PKP understanding, which is specific here to Nazir. And this leads us into the next amazing thing in the Mishnah, which is the next amazing thing in the Pasuk. And that is, what does the Pasuk mean by including Yayin and or Kol Mishrat Anavim?